Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark Levonier, your host for An Hour of Mystery. Later on, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective. But right now, the very first broadcast of the very popular series, The Adventures of Sam Spade. This ABC episode from August 2nd, 1946, called Sam and Psyche.
The hair-raising adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair.
Sam Spade, Detective Agency.
It's me, Effie.
Oh, Sam, I've been worried about you. Sid Weiss was just on the phone, and he says digging up a corpse without a permit is against the law.
It's all right, Effie. I just dug him up to say hello and put him back again.
Oh, Sam.
I'll be down in a couple of minutes to dictate my report, sweetheart. If I get lost on the way, you'll find me in City Hospital, the psycho ward, third straitjacket from the left.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented each week by Wild Root Cream Oil, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that will put your hair back in place again, grooming it neatly, naturally, the way you want it. So get the big economy-sized bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. And now, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
August 2nd, 1946. To Mrs. Gregory Denov. Subject, death of Dr. Denov. I was sitting in my office with nothing to think about except a horse named Corkscrew Jr. My secretary, Effie Perrine, came in and said there was someone outside. I didn't look up from the dope sheet, so she said it again.
Someone outside, Sam.
What's he look like?
Blue double-breasted custom-made suit, Countess Mara tie, hand-tailored shirt, English shoes, hand-trimmed Van Dyke.
Get me a blank check and send him in.
Okay, Sam. Please come in. Mr. Spade will see you now, sir.
Thank you. You are Mr. Spade, Sam Spade.
What can I do for you?
I'm Dr. Gregory Denov, a psychoanalyst. I need your help.
Lie down, doctor, and tell me all about it.
I see you might also be noted for your sense of humor as well as your discretion.
Who told you I was discreet?
A man named Nicolaitis.
Well, you tell Nicolaitis, I think he's cute, too. What else does he say about me?
That I can trust you with $10,000.
Oh. Is this Mr. Nicolaitis one of your patients?
No, he isn't. As a matter of fact, he's gotten possession of some private records of mine. Well, it's rather involved.
Nicolaitis is shaking you down, and he picked me as the middleman, is that it?
This is not an ordinary case of blackmail.
Blackmail is blackmail, even if you do it in Technicolor.
Well, as you may know, a psychoanalyst keeps a faithful transcript, a detailed record of everything a patient says during consultation, no matter how intimate or shocking.
Yeah.
This man, Nicolaitis, has managed to gain possession of a copy of one of these case histories. The patient is a very celebrated person, and should this material be divulged, it may have very serious consequences for both my patient and for me.
Doctor, your best bet's the San Francisco Police Department.
No, that's out of the question.
Then I'm afraid I can't help you.
Why not? Nicolaitis said
I'm a private detective. When I take on a client, I take on his troubles. My job is to protect him, not to stand by and see him milked. If you want to hire me on that basis, I'll listen.
Oh, I'm so tired. I must trust somebody. What can you do for me, Mr. Spade?
Write me out a check for $1,000. Got a pen? Yeah.
All right.
You see, Nicolaitis figures that if I'm getting a cut, I'll have to keep my mouth shut. I'll spend it all the same.
Here you are.
Thanks. Now, what was the last thing Nicolaitis told you?
That he would pick up the $10,000 here and deliver to you this file in question.
Can you reach him?
Yes.
Call him. Tell him you've seen me. Tell him I won't do that kind of business in my office. Tell him to come to your house. I'll be there.
What if he refuses?
He won't. Tell him I have the whole $10,000.
What time?
How about in an hour?
No, I'm sorry. We'll have to make it around 3 or... Oh, goodness, I'm late. No, I really...
That's a beautiful watch, Mr. Denov.
Yes.
Foreign?
Yes.
May I see it?
My watch? Why, really, Mr. Spade, I'm very late. I have so many things to do, and I have to be at the Majestic Theater well before the matinee starts at 2:30.
Are you going to see me at 3 o'clock if you're going to the theater?
Oh, I'm not going to stay for the performance. Well, Mr. Spade, till 3 o'clock then. Oh, my office is in my apartment. The address is here on my card. It's the penthouse.
Penthouse, huh? Okay, doctor, I'll come formal. I'll wear the top to my bathing suit. I left my office around 2:30 and started walking up Nob Hill. The Versailles Apartments, where Denov's place was, took up the whole 300 block, so I didn't have any trouble finding it. I stopped across the street for a minute to get my breath after the uphill climb, mopped my face, and started across. Just as I got to the middle of the street... The crowd was packed in so close around, I couldn't see who'd done the Brody, but I had a pretty good idea. The cops had the sidewalk roped off and guards posted at the building entrance. It took me maybe 20 minutes to elbow my way through and show my credentials. Sergeant Levine had the front door, so they let me in. Lieutenant Dundee of Homicide met me at the door of the penthouse.
Hiya, Sam. What do you want?
I want to see Dr. Denov.
The doctor's dead.
Dead?
Yeah.
He's my client. They can't do this to me. How?
Hit a Brody out the window. What are you here for?
To see his wife. Okay with you?
Why not? She's inside.
Thanks.
Mr. Danoff, please. With all due respect for your grief, I must have the keys to the cabinet where Gregory kept his confidential files. You realize that he wished me to take charge of his patients and that I am responsible. All this police and so on. We must get those files out of here as soon as possible. Yes?
My name is Spade.
I am Dr. Zoya. I was poor Dr. Denoff's oldest friend. If there's anything
I'd like to see you, Mrs. Denoff, alone.
But you police have already asked her so many questions. You see, she's not in the...
I'm not with the police. I'm a private detective. I was working for Dr. Denoff.
A private detective?
He was in trouble, you see. You see, Dr. Sawyer, the police won't believe me. Mm. Mr. Spade, you'll tell them. You'll tell him he didn't commit suicide.
Well, Mrs. Denoff, I guess that takes care of everything here. It's clearly suicide.
Oh, idiot. Blind, stupid idiot. Suicide. My husband. Look. He treated suicides. He would never...
No, please. It will be all right, my dear. I'm sorry. She's hysterical.
Yeah.
If I had the time,
Spade,
I would...
Tell them. Tell them.
Please, Mrs. Denoff. The undertaker has been arranged for a burial at 7 o'clock, Beit Israel Cemetery. Now, please, the key to Gregory's files.
Here, take it and go. Go ahead, all of you.
Okay, we'll call you now.
Oh, I'm so sorry, gentlemen. This hysteria is simply traumatic condition. If I only had the time.
Who can I turn to? Who will help me? You think it's pleasant? You think my husband would rest if they said I committed suicide? What shall I do? What shall I do? What shall I do?
Dr. Zoya, I didn't have the time, neither have I. You think it's murder? Who do you think killed your husband?
To name someone. That's a very serious charge, Mr. Spade.
Goodbye, Mrs. Denoff.
Constance Brent.
You mean Constance Brent, the actress?
Yes. Yes, she was his last patient this morning. She had threatened to kill him before.
How do you know?
My husband said so.
To you?
Well, he'd written it down on his notes on her case. Once before, she'd almost pushed him from that same window.
How about your husband and Miss Brent?
Oh, I knew she was falling in love with my husband. That always happens. They call it a transference. But in this case...
Your husband told me Miss Brent was acting in a play this afternoon over at the Majestic.
Yes, Midsummer Night's Dream. But she was here. I know she was here. Miss Ray, the receptionist, was coming back from lunch when she heard voices arguing inside... And she was sure it was Miss Brent's voice.
Show me the doctor's case history on Miss Brent.
I can't. It's missing. As soon as it happened, I went to the files. I meant to show it to the police.
Who could have taken it?
Constance Brent was the last one in that room before he died.
Yeah. When did you see Nicolaitis last?
Nick who?
Skip it.
Where can I reach you in case...
For the next couple of hours, I'll be at the Majestic Theater. I want to see how good an actress this Constance Brent is.
Thank you. door on end.
Yes? Miss Constance Brent's dressing room? What do you want? I want to talk to Miss Brent.
Well, you can talk to me. I'm her husband.
So you're Mr. Brent.
I'm Jonathan Wallace. She's Mrs. Wallace. Now, what do you want with my wife?
I've come to tell her that Dr. Denov is dead.
Are you sure?
You try falling from a 12th floor window sometime.
Well, that's the best news I've heard this year. I'm afraid it'll be a shock for Constance.
Maybe, maybe not. She was the last person to see him alive, as far as anybody can make out.
Are you from the police?
No, I'm from the insurance company. Claims investigator.
What do you want to see Constance for? The policy wasn't made out to her, was it?
No, made out to his widow. But she can't collect. Police say it was suicide.
That settles it. This is the last time I play Titania. Stand around while Puck talks his head off. Who is this person?
Darling, I'm afraid this is going to be a shock. This man is from an insurance company. Dr. Denov is dead.
Oh, what a pity. What happened?
The police say he jumped. His wife says he was pushed. She also says that you, Miss Brent, might have been the pusher.
Oh, now really, it's too absurd. How like a wife.
What time did your play start this afternoon, Miss Brent?
Nothing at 2:30, always. Always.
And the late lamented Dr. Denov jumped at 3 o'clock.
I didn't say he did. Doesn't this news shock you?
But of course. Do you think good psychoanalysts are easy to find?
Looks like your next doctor will have to start from scratch. Your case history seems to be missing from Dr. Denov's files.
Missing?
No. What is it?
Has a man named Nicolaitis been in touch with you?
I've never heard of him.
Chances are you will.
Does he have Dr. Denov's notes on my case?
Could be.
This is frightful.
Hot reading, huh?
You seem to know this person, Nicolaitis. Get that file for me and I'll pay you well for it.
Just a minute, my lovely Titania. We don't know who this man really is. He might even be Nicolaitis himself. Let me see your company credentials.
Now, what do you know? Somebody picked my pocket. My wallet's gone.
I thought so. All right, you tell me who you are. I'll call the police.
Oh, no, no, Jonathan, no police.
Let's get off the merry-go-round. My name is Spade. You'll find me in the phone book under S. My office is open until 6 o'clock. And if a man answers, don't hang up. It'll be me. Found a Nicolaitis yet?
Not one. I even tried spelling it backwards.
Nobody ever heard of a man named Nicolaitis. Beginning to think there ain't no such person.
Pardon me. Do I hear my name mentioned? I'm Nicolaitis.
Sam, I still think you're right.
Come all the way in, Mr. Nicolaitis. Sit down.
Oh, thank you.
If you need me, Sam, just scream.
What can I do for you?
Oh, I've come for my money.
What money?
The $10,000. You remember the $10,000?
Refresh my memory.
Oh, Dr. Denhouse, the gentleman who visited you this morning?
Oh, that $10,000.
Well, you see, you remember now.
Yeah, it all comes back to me now. You were supposed to deliver something for the money.
Since Dr. Denhouse is dead, that is no longer important. You will give me the money, please, and I will not disturb your afternoon any further.
Suppose I refuse.
Oh, that would grieve me. In my grief, there's no telling what I might do.
Dr. Denov's dead. There's nothing more you can do to hurt him.
Oh, never would I attempt to hurt poor Dr. Denov. But in my sorrow, it would be so great if I should be forced to hurt the woman he lost. After all, these are the forgeries of jealousy.
Titania, huh? Ah, yes, Midsummer Night's Dream, Act 1, Scene 18. I'm a little rusty on my Shakespeare.
Oh, you are indeed, Mr. Spade. Titania doesn't appear until well into Act 2.
She doesn't, huh? Yeah, that's right. I guess she isn't on for 40 minutes or so.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Spade, but I didn't come here to discuss drama.
What else have you got to discuss? When Dr. Denov died, your market died with him.
That is a very unprogressive view, Mr. Spade. There's always a gentleman named Jonathan Wallace.
Why, you fiend. You don't mean you'd sell to both of us.
Mr. Spade, how can you have such a low opinion of me? I will prove my integrity. I will give you the material. You give me the money.
Hand it over.
In the Levant, Mr. Spade, we have a saying. He who goes too close to the bear soon loses his beard. I have left my beard at home.
Okay, I'll meet you anywhere you say, anytime you say.
Excellent. At 7 in your apartment? Hmm?
Won't that be walking into the bear's cave?
In the Levant, Mr. Spade, we have a saying. Private dicks do not kill people in their own apartments.
It was then 6 p.m. I called Effie for messages. She told me that you had been phoning frantically, Mrs. Denov. I still had maybe 30 minutes before Nikolaitis was due at my apartment, so I breezed on up to your place on the hill. We had a very interesting chat, remember, Mrs. Denov? Looking back on it, that was probably the most interesting conversation we had. Funny, I can't remember much of anything you said, but it was so cozy there in your place. And what with your clock being about 20 minutes slow, it must have been something like 7:30 before I left you. I grabbed a cab and told the hacky to step on it. I hoped Nikolaitis was still waiting at my apartment. He was. Mr. Nikolaitis, I'm sorry to be late. He was lying on my bathroom floor. The little guy was looking just about as natty as when he'd been in my office, except that the beautiful silk scarf he'd been wearing was twisted into a tight noose around his neck. Mr. Nikolaitis was a very dead blackmailer. His eyes were open, and he seemed to be looking right at me as I bent over him. The finger marks on his throat were too blotchy to be of any use. Pretty soon, Lieutenant Dundee and Sergeant Polhouse came in and walked over behind me. We all stood there for a second, and then Polhouse bent down and closed those eyes.
You know him, Sam?
His name is Nikolaitis. That's all I know about him.
What did he come here to your place for?
I don't know.
You invited him?
I wouldn't have been surprised to find him here, but not like this. You boys got a smear on him yet?
Sure. He's an old customer of mine. Runs a photo lab. Photostats, microfilm.
Microfilm. Nobody makes any sense. They're all screwballs, psychos, neurotics. What am I doing in the middle of this anyway?
Sam, don't scream at us. We're just doing a job.
Oh, I'm sorry, boys. This Dr. Denov is my client.
Mental
and I was...
expert. That Denov probably had a screw loose somewhere and needed a psychoanalyst himself. Say, maybe he was...
Yeah. Hey, look, Dundee. I'm going out of here now. Do I call Sid Weiss and we go through all that again, or are you going to let me walk?
Why, Sam, you can go. I know where you sleep. I'll wake you when I'm ready for you.
Well, Mr. Spade?
I want some answers, Dr. Zoya, and you're the guy who can give them to me.
I'm listening. Just let the questions flow into your mind and do not try to repress any of them. Speak instantly, whatever...
Okay, question number one, without thinking. Do you think Dr. Denov was a suicide?
Well, I had not seen Dr. Denov for many years. He had been my student in Vienna. I was his analyst, in fact.
That's all very interesting, Doctor, but my question...
Yes, sir. Did poor Dr. Denov commit suicide? I have reviewed all the material, manifest and hypothetical, and I came to the conclusion, no, it was quite impossible. You see, these paranoid...
Okay, question number two. Was Dr. Denov in love with Constance Brent?
I suppose I can now answer that question. When I arrived in San Francisco, I found him in great distress. He told me he feared he was losing his objectivity towards this patient.
In other words, he was in love with her?
Yes.
You think she might have murdered him?
All psychoanalytical subjects develop aggressive feelings toward the doctor. Nearly all of my patients have threatened me at one time or another.
You don't say. Tell me, Dr. Zoya, you know anything about Jonathan Wallace, Miss Brent's husband?
A violent type, almost psychotic.
Yeah? How about you, Dr. Zoya? Could you have done it?
That is a most interesting question, Mr. Spade. When I arrived here from Vienna without funds, dependent on the kindness of my former students, I must confess that I felt a certain antagonism, It disturbed me to realize that a man of my standing in the profession should have be dependent on the goodwill of a younger and, I sincerely believe, less gifted man. However, I overcame this, and I didn't kill him.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, thanks a lot.
Oh, Peep. Truly a life study. There is no accounting. For instance, Dr. Danoff. He came to me only this afternoon with the strangest request.
Yeah?
He gave me the gold watch. The gold watch which I had presented to him many years ago upon his graduation in Vienna. He had a patient waiting and so had not much time to explain.
Where is this watch?
Please, I'm coming to that. He asked me to promise that I would have the watch buried with him if something should happen. That has been done.
But Dr. Denov just died at 3:00.
It is a Mosaic law that the deceased be buried before sundown.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Doctor. Thanks a lot.
I hope I've been of some help.
Doctor, you'll never know how much you've helped me. Spade.
What's happened?
I think I got the answers, Mrs. Denov. That file on Constance Brent. Your husband knew that you'd been going through it.
Oh, Mr. Spade.
Shut up and listen to me. He took it out of the files, had it microfilmed for his own private records, and destroyed the original.
Really?
The man who did the microfilming was Nicolaitis. He delivered one print to your husband and kept another for himself. He was murdered in my apartment for the copy he used to shake down your husband. The killer now has that copy, if it hasn't already been destroyed. But we can still put our hands on the first strip of microfilm which you delivered to your husband.
This is astonishing. How?
It's in the gold watch which was buried with him.
The watch that Dr. Zoe...
That's right. Denov made up his mind that whatever he knew about Constance Brent was going to go to the grave with him. What are you doing tonight?
Well, nothing.
And we got a date, sweetheart, you and I. I'll be back toward the wee hours. All paths lead to the grave. Ophelia, Act 6.
Gregory's grave? But shouldn't we get a court order and have it done properly?
The courts don't open until 10 in the morning, sweetheart. And Lieutenant Dundee's going to start asking me some questions about that stiff in my apartment before then. You see, baby, I can't wait.
We shouldn't be doing this.
If I'm wrong this time, it won't be wasted effort. I'll crawl into the grave myself and pull it in after. Here. I struck it. Give me that crowbar, Mrs. Denov, quick.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Put that flashlight in here, sweetheart. You look the other way. Yeah. Yeah, here it is. Look.
What, Mr. Speed? What have you got?
The watch. Here, put the flash on it while I open it.
Here's my nail file. Pry off the back.
Thanks. That does it. Here's the film.
All right, Mr. Spade. Give me that film.
Well, if it isn't the second gravedigger from Hamlet, Mr. Constance Brent.
Stop clowning and hand it up to me.
You better do as he says, Mr. Spade. We've both got guns.
I was expecting that. Took you a long time to get here, Mr. Wallace. How did dear Constance make out as Lady Macbeth?
Just give me that film.
Stop being an idiot, Wallace. The cemetery is crawling with cops. Put that gun away before you drop it and break your foot.
Come up out of that grave, Spade, or you'll stay there forever.
Okay, Dundee.
Get those hands up, everybody.
Go ahead, Dundee. Make the pinch.
Okay. Sam Spade, I arrest you for body snatching, violation of graves under the civil code number...
No, you fool. You're supposed to arrest Mrs. Gregory Denov and Jonathan Wallace for the murder of Gregory Denov and Pericles Nicolaitis.
But I... Oh, yeah.
No, you don't.
It was smart of you, Mrs. Denov, to make me late for my appointment with Nicolaitis. You did that so that Wallace could nail him in my apartment for the microfilm. You thought you could use that film to pin Denov's murder on Constance Brent. But after your late husband caught you tampering with his files, he added a few well-chosen words to it so that the film put the finger on you and your boyfriend, Mr. Wallace, in case anything happened to the doctor. So Wallace had to kill Nicolaitis. You weren't smart to push your husband out the window. That looked like suicide. You might have gotten away with it, Mrs. Denov, if you'd bashed your husband's head in with a bottle. That reminds me, Effie, pour me a drink.
Is that all?
Sign it, put a special delivery on it, and send it care of the matron to Hatchepi Prison. Go on, have one yourself.
Oh, thank you. Here's how.
Oh. You'll get used to it.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
Wild Root Cream Oil presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, produced and directed by William Spear.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, on Tuned to Yesterday, the first broadcast in the popular series from August 2, 1946 on ABC. The last show would be heard on another network, NBC, in April of 1951, and according to many, especially the fans of the show, very prematurely. Not only were the mystery stories popular in the program, but the chemistry between Howard Duff and Lorene Tuttle, who played Effie on the series, was also a big draw. It was canceled not due to ratings or the stars, but because of its creator, Dashiell Hammett, who never actually wrote a script for the show. During 1951, that might ring a bell with some history buffs, as it being the Red Scare, with Senator Joseph McCarthy at the helm, interrogating most of Hollywood to collect information on their existent or non-existent communist sympathies. When Dashiell Hammett appeared before the committee, he was flippant and aggressive, and they took that in pretty much the worst way possible, and he was ostracized in Hollywood, with his show being taken off the air. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Nick Carter, Master Detective, with a case of the Alphabet Club, this Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast, heard on July 22, 1945.
There is something in any person that makes him more than eager to join a club which has difficult entrance requirements. And the highest form of flattery is to find that your initiation to the club has been tailored to suit your own particular vocation. Thus, if you're a detective and you've been invited to join the exclusive Alphabet Club, your initiation involves the solving of a murder. Hello, creeps. This is T4Y, opening the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. We were reading some detective stories last week, trying to cure an annoying case of insomnia. One particular set of tales was interesting enough, had sufficient deductive reasoning so that we thought you, too, would be interested in it. So tonight, we bring you an exciting chapter from the life story of that detective name of Nick Carter. A single light burns brightly down in the basement, deep under the old brownstone mansion, the corner of 5th and 4th, illuminating a small paper target. 20 yards away, Nick Carter stands, firing methodically.
To the left, about 8 feet, 8 inches. Try again. Left again, 9 feet, 2 inches. 9 feet exactly that time.
Nick! Hey, Nick!
Yes, Patsy?
Cease firing. I want to come in.
Come ahead. I've just about finished.
Gotta close up shop today, Nick. You'll be late.
Patsy, I've won my bet with Sergeant Matheson.
What bet?
I bet him a dollar the Austrian Mauser wouldn't eject a cartridge more than 10 feet. I've just fired 50 rounds, and not one cartridge is more than 9.5 feet from the gun.
Oh.
I win a dollar, and Jansen is cleared of the murder charge, which proves that he couldn't have done it. Personally, I think...
I was waiting for you to notice.
Evening, Garner. Well, Miss Bowen, you look most charming.
You really think so, Nick?
May I ask where you're going tonight?
Out. With you?
With me.
Please, hurry, Nick. We'll be late.
Well, late for what?
Don't tell me you've forgotten. And you were so anxious to go when the letter came. Honestly, Nick, sometimes I believe you're not human. Now hurry and get into your dinner clothes. I'll explain on the way over.
But, Patsy, where are we going?
To a murder.
All right. You can stop kidding me now. I remembered, Patsy. I was so wrapped up in that ballistics work, it slipped my mind.
You sure?
I'll recite it like a lesson. I've been invited to join the famous Alphabet Club, the most exclusive gathering of eminent talents in the country, right?
Right. Incidentally, why is it called the Alphabet Club, Nick?
Because the first letters of the names of the charter members are the first four letters of the alphabet. Arnold Archer.
The financier.
Mm-hmm. Nelson Burns, the architect. Walter Crane, the boy wonder engineer. And George Dennis, the attorney.
Oh.
Now, incidentally, they're not only the charter members, they're the initiating committee, too. They're the ones who are going to put me through the ropes before the rest of the club arrive for dinner.
Oh, that initiation stunt's a cute idea.
Yes, in fact, rather tickles me. Staging a make-believe murder. They swear I'll never be able to break it.
Challenging the mastermind, eh? That's the club over there. You can park in front.
Righto.
We're just about on time. Oh, please hurry, Nick.
I saw Burns the other day. He swore they'd cooked up a beauty. You know, I'm really intrigued.
Yes, please?
Miss Bowen and Mr. Carter.
Oh, yes. Good evening, madam. Good evening, sir. Welcome to the Alphabet Club.
Thank you.
The members are waiting in the lounge room. Will you follow me, please?
Could I join too, Nick?
No, Patsy. They don't admit women. But they asked me to bring you along because they said they knew I worked with you on my cases.
Pretty swank place, isn't it, Nick?
I wonder how much the club dues are.
Right here, sir. Just one moment, please. Gentlemen, Mr. Carter and Miss Bowen.
Well, for the love of...
Gentlemen, open the door, please. Mr. Archer, Mr. Burns, please open. Mr. Crane, Mr. Dennis.
Enter the house of death. Murder awaits Nick Carter.
Golly. It's pitch dark.
Watch your step, Patsy. Don't trip on any dead body.
What's that noise I hear? Sounds like we're in a toy shop.
Let's close it off, Miss Bowen. Lights, please. Let's have some light, Walter. That's it. Here we are.
Oh, golly. Who's that lying on the floor?
I assume it's Santa Claus.
Right you are. The name of this mystery is Who Killed Santa Claus? And if Mr. Carter and Miss Bowen want any dinner, they'd better find out who done it, and quick.
Very well, gentlemen. I shall begin with the taking of the evidence.
My name is Arnold Archer. I love Santa Claus, but today I hate him.
Why?
Because he brought me this cat pistol, and I really wanted a horn.
My name is Nelson Burns, and this horn is a sad disappointment to me. I hate Santa Claus. I really wanted the sword he gave Walter Crane.
And I wanted the cat pistol he gave Archer.
Well, who's Santa Claus?
Oh, that's George Dennis. He'll say hello after Mr. Carter finds out who done it.
Well, gentlemen, I see you all have a good and sufficient motive for killing Santa Claus. I must now examine our make-believe corpse to discover the method of this brutal, foul, and illegal make-believe murder. In my opinion... Patsy.
Nick, what is it?
Get on the phone. Call Maddie. Get the homicide squad up here fast.
Mr. Carter...
I'm not joking, Mr. Archer. You better call the other members and cancel the dinner. Your make-believe murder has turned real. Dennis has been shot to death.
Oh, heaven.
All right. Now, just a minute. I want to get you guys straight.
Who's the corpse, Nick? George Dennis, the lawyer. You remember him, Matty. He was retained as an expert in the Wilner case.
Yeah, I got that. Now, which one is Arnold Archer?
I am.
The financier, Sergeant.
Believe me, Sergeant Matheson, this must be some kind of ghastly mistake.
Well, none of us would want to kill Dennis. We were his friends, Sergeant. We couldn't have any reason to kill him.
Oh, you're Burns, huh? Nelson Burns.
Yes.
And the gentleman over there is Walter Crane.
I think this is in pretty bad taste, Carter, and I don't like it. Dennis was killed accidentally, there's no doubt of it. It's pretty cheap to try and turn this into a murder case for the sake of notoriety.
Now, listen, wise
Wait,
guy...
Mr. Crane, you're positive this was an accident. Why?
Well, isn't it obvious? The four of us were alone in this room when the steward knocked on the door. Dennis lay down on the floor, I put out the lights, and Nelson Burns fired off the blanks.
Yes?
Well, evidently, a round of live ammunition must have gotten mixed up with the blanks.
No, that's not true. I swear it.
Mr. Burns is right. I checked the gun. There are four rimfire blank shells in the chambers.
Only four?
I see Patsy understands what I mean. Doesn't anyone else?
What is this, Nick?
When Patsy and I were outside, we heard five shots.
Five?
Meaning that a fifth shot was fired along with those four blanks. Meaning that one of you three gentlemen took advantage of the make-believe murder to murder George Dennis.
Why, that's ridiculous.
Quiet, gentlemen, please. None of you to leave this room. Maddie, get your squad in here. Search these men. Then take this place apart if you have to. I want to find the gun that killed Dennis.
Okay, Nick.
The murderer wants to save us the trouble. He can talk now. Believe me, gentlemen, this won't be any make-believe search. Nobody have anything to say? All right, Matty, get going.
Right.
We're over here, Matty.
Comparing notes. Is there anything to offer, Sergeant?
Well, let's hear what you've got first.
Well, Archer's the famous financier. Worth over $1 million. Wouldn't kill for money.
Nelson Burns, same status. Plenty of money. Ditto for Walter Crane.
Uh-huh. All four men were pretty close friends at college. Known each other for years. Apparently, they're still friends. Now, that might not be true. People grow apart sometimes.
On the other hand, all three are pretty ruthless kind of men. I imagine you have to be tough to make the success they have.
And you have to have a certain amount of cold courage to pull off a murder the way this one's been handled. Now, how about the gun?
There ain't no gun.
What?
You heard me, Patsy. There ain't no gun. Nick, we took them guys apart and put them together again. We took the room apart. There ain't but one gun in the place. The one that fired the blanks.
But that's impossible.
You're telling me? Nick, we opened every book. We even took the toys apart. No soap. And the gun couldn't have been thrown out the window because there ain't no window.
Hmm.
Look, it's getting pretty late, Nick, and they're getting kind of sore in there. Do you want me to hold them?
I'll tell you what, Matty. Their bedroom's upstairs. They can all go upstairs if they want and try and get some sleep, but they're not to leave the club.
Right.
And I want a ballistics report of the bullet that killed Dennis as soon as possible.
Right.
If you want me, I'll be in the kitchen.
What doing?
Getting something to eat and pumping the steward. I'm hungry for food and facts. Now, this is a man that can cook after my own heart.
Thank you, sir.
Me too. I'll take lessons from you any day.
Thank you, ma'am.
Too bad a dinner like this had to be wasted.
Oh, it's not the dinner I mind, sir. It's the fact that your joining the club was so...
Inauspicious?
The very word, sir.
You think they'll take me in anyway, despite what happened tonight?
Why, of course, sir. I'm sure the gentlemen are still anxious to have the famous Nick Carter as a member.
Even what it means, the famous Nick Carter has become merely an infamous detective accusing the members of murder?
I'm sure it was an accident, sir.
You think a live shell might have gotten mixed up with the blanks?
Yes, sir.
I see. Steward, do you know who loaded the gun?
It was Mr. Crane, sir.
The engineer?
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Crane always plans our little festivities, sir. He planned the entire initiation tonight. Talking about it all week he was, sir. I used to see him late at night, thinking it over in the lounge, chuckling to himself.
Was it his gun?
Yes, sir.
I see. Well, thanks very much, Steward. Both for the excellent food and for the information.
Especially the food.
Come on, Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to go upstairs and have a few words with Crane.
Nick, do you think Crane...
I don't know, Betsy. Certainly, he's a likely prospect.
I didn't like the way he kept insisting it was an accident.
What I don't like is the fact that Walter Crane, engineer, gentleman with a calculating and mechanical frame of mind... Gentleman who loaded the gun himself failed to notice an extra shot was fired.
Nick.
That's no initiation. Come on, upstairs, quick.
Hey, Nick, you hear that?
Came from upstairs, Matty. Come quick.
Sounded like Crane to me.
Nick, it might be a trap to get us up here.
Now, wait a minute. This is Crane's room right here. Glory be. It's Crane, all right. Dead on the floor.
With a toy sword in his heart.
For heaven's sakes, Carter, what is it?
Who screamed?
All right, don't park here. This ain't no Coney Island peep show.
But Arnold, it's hey, Crane. He's
what do you guys think this is, a reunion? Go on, get out of here. Go on back to your room.
Just a minute, Matty. I want to ask a couple of questions.
Okay.
Mr. Archer, where were you when you heard Crane scream?
Well, I just finished bathing. I was in the shower room.
I see. It's why you're still carrying a bath towel.
Yes.
And you, Mr. Burns?
Well, I was in my room waiting for Archer to finish. I was smoking a cigar at my window.
Where's the cigar?
I don't know.
I think I dropped it out the window when I heard Crane yell.
Matty, get one of your men to check that.
Right. Be back in a flash.
Now let's have a look at that sword. May I borrow your towel a moment, Archer?
Certainly.
I don't want to smudge any prints that might be on it.
You are?
Thanks. Let's wrap this towel around it.
Mr. Carter, surely you don't think I...
You what, Mr. Burns?
Well, merely because I said in jest that I wanted Crane's toy sword during the make-believe murder. You don't think I killed Crane with it?
Deductive reasoning isn't that obvious, Mr. Burns. You have nothing to worry about on that count.
Thank you.
But both of you have plenty to worry about on other counts.
No, Mr. Carter.
Look here, gentlemen. You can't... I don't think either of you understand. Two murders have been committed in this club. Someone's guilty. That leaves three suspects. You, Mr. Archer.
What?
You, Mr. Burns.
But I...
And the steward. They execute men for murder, gentlemen. Try to understand that.
Well, I found the cigar all right, Nick.
All right, Matty, thanks. These gentlemen may return to their rooms.
All right, gents. Well, Nick, what about Crane?
Killed almost instantly, just time enough to scream.
Uh-huh.
Whoever killed him used plenty of power to thrust this dull blade deep enough to penetrate the heart.
Any prints on the blade, Nick?
I'll take the towel off and look. No. Blade's dry and clean as a mirror. You look at it by reflected light. Not a latent print on it, not even a smudge.
That doesn't help much.
Well, I got news. It ain't going to help much more.
Yes?
They took this slug out of Dennis. Here you are, look at it.
Thanks. 22, I see. Is it... Wait. Hello.
You see, huh?
Nick, what is it?
No rifling marks on this bullet, Patsy.
No rifling marks?
No lands or grooves on the slug at all. Now, what's that supposed to mean? The killer threw it at Dennis?
That's impossible. We heard the extra shot.
Maddie's just being difficult, Patsy. I think Maddie's bad news is the best I've had on this case.
Well, now, what's that supposed to mean?
It means I think I know where to find the gun that killed Dennis. Come on, Patsy. We're going to have a look at Dennis's house.
Well, how in blazes did the gun get there?
I didn't say the gun was there. The gun's in this house.
Then why do you go into Dennis's place?
To find out why it was fired. Not a scrap of paper worth looking at in his desk, Betsy. Looks like we'll have to open that safe.
Too bad Dennis was a bachelor. No one here to give us the combination.
Well, we could wait for a court order to have the safe opened, but I don't think we'll bother. Let's have the stethoscope for my bag.
Okay, Chief. You going to crack this crib?
Hey, where did you pick up that jargon?
From a crime magazine. Here's your scope.
Thanks. Well, that magazine must have been 15 years old. Crooks don't talk that way anymore.
No? How would they describe what you're doing?
They'd say that I was exercising a natural facility and delicacy of touch to turn the dial. Meanwhile, using a medical device to hear the tumblers fall. Quiet now. Shouldn't take long. It's a three-bolt job.
What made you go straight, Nick?
That, Patsy, is a base insinuation. My criminal facility was acquired during a long career of fighting crooks. There we are. All right, let's go through this stuff quickly. Here's Dennis's insurance. $100,000. Bar Association's beneficiary.
Packages of old letters.
Skip them.
Oh, here's a note from Archer. Offers Dennis $150,000 for the shares of stock Dennis holds in Archer's company.
Nice sum. Wait a minute. Here's a will.
Oh, let's see.
Now, this is very interesting. Mr. Dennis leaves all cash and stock holdings to his old ex-college roommate, John Wendell.
Who's John Wendell?
John Wendell happens to be the steward of the Alphabet Club.
Well.
Old college friend, huh? Maybe that won't interest Matty.
Nick, do you think it was Wendell, the steward? He killed Dennis for the stock?
Now, wait, let's have a look at that envelope here. Looks like it contains stock shares.
It does. It... Nick... There's only one share of stock in here. One single share. Par value, $500. Someone's taken the rest.
Just one share, huh? Patsy, where's that note from Archer you just read me?
Here, Nick. Why?
Let's see. Offer you $150,000 for... Patsy, you didn't read this correctly. It says that Archer offers Dennis $150,000 for his share of stock. Dennis only owned the one share.
Then why should Archer offer him $150,000 for a share of stock worth only $500?
You'll find out shortly. Let me have that phone.
Oh. Why do you always have to be so mysterious, Nick?
I don't like making statements until I'm positive.
Alphabet Club. Sergeant Matheson speaking.
Matty, this is Nick.
Oh, what'd you find, Nick?
I think I found all the answers.
Well, Nick, leave me here.
Not on the phone. I'm going to demonstrate. Now listen.
I'm listening.
Get the surviving members out of bed.
Yeah?
Tell them I've broken the case. Tell them I'm going to reenact the crime for them.
Yeah, how?
When Patsy and I come to the door, I want the steward to meet us. Then we'll play the make-believe murder all over again, just as it happened. You can take Crane's part.
Reenact the make-believe murder?
Right.
I think you're crazy, Nick.
Maybe. But this time, the make-believe murder is going to lead to an honest-to-goodness solution. All set, Patsy?
I've got it, Nick. We're going to repeat everything we did earlier this evening.
Right. And that repetition means every detail, no matter how small.
Right.
First, I rang the bell.
Yes, sir?
Miss Bowen and Mr. Carter.
Good evening, madam. Good evening, sir. Welcome to the Alphabet Club. I think I asked you to follow me, Mr. Carter.
Right. Go ahead. All set in there, Matty?
Lights out and ready to go.
Gentlemen, Mr. Carter and Miss Bowen.
Make like I'm screaming, Nick. That was Crane's job.
Go on, Ford. Knock again.
Then I said, gentlemen, please open the door.
Right. And then?
Only four shots that time.
That was Burns opening the door. Then what?
I said something about entering the house of death.
We came in.
And heard toys.
Then I told Crane to put on the lights.
I'll take care of that.
Thanks. I asked who was lying on the floor.
And I assumed it was Santa Claus. Then you started explaining, Archer. So explain.
The name of this mystery is Who Killed Santa Claus? If Mr. Carter wants any dinner, he'd better solve it.
Gentlemen, I shall begin with the taking of the evidence.
Oh, this is screwy.
My name is Arnold Archer. Today, I hate Santa Claus.
Why?
Because he brought me this cap pistol. I wanted a horn.
My name is Nelson Burns. And this horn...
1 minute, Mr. Burns.
Yes?
We left out a detail. Mr. Archer was supposed to snap his cap pistol when he spoke. Go ahead, Mr. Archer. Well, go ahead. Fire that gun, Mr. Archer.
You'll never get me.
Oh, no, you don't.
Watch out for that toy gun.
Glory be, that cap pistol was loaded. It fired a real bullet.
And that... lie still, Archer. You'll never break away. That, Matty, is a solution of our missing gun.
But, Nick, why?
The single share of stock Dennis held was the answer. He never owned more than one share of stock, and yet Archer wanted to buy it back for $150,000.
$150,000? What for?
I'm afraid Mr. Dennis was guilty of an old legal racket. As a stockholder in Archer's firm, he had the right of access to the company's books.
You seem to have all the answers, Carter. Yes, he searched through those books until he dug out enough of the evidence of illegal market operations to ruin us.
And then offered to sell his share of stock and stockholders' right to bring action back to you for an exorbitant sum.
Blackmail.
Legal blackmail. Mr. Archer, you were afraid Dennis was going to blackmail you for the rest of his life. So you killed him, which is the final irony of the case, that the make-believe murder was committed with a make-believe gun.
Nick, I thought Sergeant Matheson checked the toy gun when he searched the room and found nothing wrong with it.
That's right, Ken. A point very few people know is the fact that certain types of cap pistols can fire live ammunition. The bullet is wedged into the barrel through a small hole in the plate that should support the cap. Then the hammer is snapped and discharges the bullet, accurately enough to kill at short range.
So Archer killed Dennis with the gun and then pretended it was a toy.
Right. He disposed of the cartridge by the simple means of swallowing it. I guessed that, and he admitted it.
Well, why'd he kill Crane?
Because Crane's methodical memory couldn't be fooled. He finally recalled where the extra shot came from. When he called Archer into his room and confronted him, Archer killed him. Said he just grabbed up the toy sword and stabbed.
Did you know that before?
Well, I had a pretty good idea. On the pretext of protecting fingerprints on the sword, I borrowed Archer's towel. He claimed he'd been bathing, but his towel was quite dry. Didn't even dampen the metal blade.
That's right. I remember you mentioned it.
I staged the repeat performance to frighten Archer and save us the trouble of a long cross-examination. I knew that Archer, in self-defense, would probably load his toy gun again, hoping to use it to effect an escape. That was what I was playing the scene for.
Golly.
Pretty clever.
That closes tonight's story on the Mystery Playhouse. The tale you heard was from the life story of Detective Nick Carter. Now, some interesting notes. This time, and really, we have definite word from mine host of the Playhouse, Peter Lorre by name, remember, that T4Y has lost his lease. That, in effect, Mr. Lorre is coming home to roost and expects to be back here among the cobwebs before you have time to recount your points. I wrote and told him we were expecting him. What more can I do? Now I see it's getting early again. This is T4Y closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Oh, yes. Good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Nick Carter, Master Detective, on Tuned to Yesterday, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from July 22nd, 1945. Bringing to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.